Sorry. Is that it? No, 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 no. United States versus Sandoval Gomez, Ms. Parker. Sorry.
May it please the court, Lisa Parker, on behalf of defendant appellant Philemon Sandoval Gomez, who is appealing the district court's judgment for three reasons. First of all, the district court clearly erred when it denied Mr. Sandoval Gomez a two-level sentence reduction. Second, the prosecutor's statements at trial denied Mr. Sandoval Gomez a fair trial. And third, the government presented insufficient evidence to refute Mr. Sandoval Gomez's affirmative defense. As to the first point, the district court clearly erred when it denied Mr. Sandoval Gomez a two-level sentence reduction for acceptance of responsibility. Under the sentencing guidelines, a defendant is to be awarded a two-level sentence reduction if they admit the essential elements of their guilt. And here, Mr. Sandoval Gomez did exactly that. Under 8 U.S.C. 1326, the government only had three elements to prove at trial. One, that Mr. Sandoval Gomez was an alien. Two, that he had been deported. And three, following his deportation, he returned to the United States.
But at the time that this case was tried, wasn't the government required to prove that the defendant did not have an objectively reasonable belief that he had permission to be in the United States?
At the time this case was tried, there was a limited affirmative defense recognized by this court, in which the defendant had the opportunity to submit evidence that he reasonably believed that he had the right to return to this country and had returned to the country lawfully. It wasn't the government's burden to prove that. It was Mr. Sandoval Gomez's burden to prove that.
But if that was an element of the crime, then his denial of it would be a refusal to accept responsibility, wouldn't it?
Well, Your Honor, we submit that it wasn't an element of the crime. There are only three elements to the crime. There have always only been three elements to the crime. In part, I think that's part of the confusion in terms of this
Wait, are you saying that a person who says, I'm innocent because I have an affirmative defense, is accepting responsibility?
Well, I'm saying that
what sense does that make?
I'm saying in this case, Mr. Sandoval Gomez, no matter what he did, was going to be found guilty of the crime because he admitted to the three elements necessary.
No, there's such a thing as defenses. And if you claim a defense, you're not accepting responsibility for anything.
Here, the defense was separate.
Who cares? I don't understand you. Suppose a person gets up and says, yeah, I pulled the trigger, but I was nuts when I did it. So I wanted, and he goes to trial, and his insanity defense is rejected. You're saying he's entitled to acceptance of responsibility?
Well, here I think it's different. Mr. Sandoval Gomez never denies that he reentered the country.
I don't understand you. I'm putting you a case where a murderer says, yes, I pulled the trigger, I killed him, but I was insane, therefore I'm innocent. And you're saying that's consistent with acceptance of responsibility because he's conceded the government's prima facie case.
That's correct. I'm saying that he has admitted.
Yeah, but that can't be right because that's crazy, right? This is a person who steadfastly asserts his innocence but does it on the basis of a defense rather than a denial of one of the elements of the crime. I don't see what reason you could give for wanting to permit an acceptance of responsibility discount in such a case.
Well, here Mr. Sandoval Gomez had a valid resident alien ID card. He went to the border, passed two border patrols, showed them the ID card. No one said to him, you're not permitted to come back here. You're not permitted to re-enter the United States. So he thought,
whatever he thought, what does that have to do with acceptance of responsibility? Acceptance of responsibility means, I admit I committed a crime. I'm sorry. Then you give the person, he doesn't go to trial, he pleads guilty, he's remorseful, he gets his acceptance of responsibility. You're re-arguing the merits and say because his defense might have prevailed, therefore he should be given an acceptance of responsibility discount.
Well, Your Honor, I agree with you in a general sense. But in terms of what the sentencing guidelines state, they state, did the defendant put the government to its burden at trial, and he did not. He admitted to each of the three elements required for guilt.
No, no. He did put the government to its burden. He made the government try him rather than pleading guilty. That's putting the government to a considerable expense.
He went to trial merely to assert his affirmative defense, but he did
But that's in my case of the murderer. He admits all the elements of the crime, but he insists on a trial because he wants to assert a defense of insanity. That person can't get an acceptance of responsibility discount.
Well, here, the trial judge didn't even look at the three elements necessary. She merely found that because she was unconvinced of his affirmative defense, that he hadn't accepted any responsibility, but he had. He admitted that he had reentered the country.
Would you describe his affirmative defense?
His affirmative defense was that he reasonably believed that he could reenter the country. He never denied that he reentered the country, and then later found out that that was unlawful, but at the time he reentered,
But then he didn't accept responsibility for committing an offense, did he?
He admitted that he reentered the country, and that in and of itself...
No, but I mean, I'm saying your affirmative defense, by its very nature, says he didn't commit a crime.
His affirmative defense, by its very nature, says he did not know it was a crime when he committed it.
No, no, no. That wouldn't be a defense. That wouldn't be a defense. It's only a defense if it cancels the crime.
Well, he has admitted to the three elements which were required for the crime, and has only raised an affirmative
defense. That's exactly the same with the murder thing. I don't understand what you're arguing.
Well, it's Mr. Sandoval Gomez's position that he did accept responsibility, and that the district court erred when it did not look at the fact that he accepted those three elements, but merely concentrated on his affirmative defense, which has to do with intent, which is not one of the three elements required. So that's the first reason that he appealed. The second reason is that the prosecutor made several statements at trial which denied Mr. Sandoval Gomez a fair trial. The prosecutor stated that in order to acquit Mr. Sandoval Gomez, you'd have to believe that the government's witnesses are liars. And this court has said that those kinds of statements are improper.
What's improper about it? I don't understand.
Well, it's improper because it alters the jury's decision-making process. If the jury is focusing on whether or not the government's witnesses are liars, they're not focusing on the criteria that they need to look at.
I don't understand.
German
you.
Guilt.
I don't understand you. It's obviously very important whether government witnesses are lying or telling the truth.
Well, this case this court in Vargas held exactly that. That you cannot say that. You cannot say that the government's witnesses are liars. You can't make that sort of either-or determination, that it's improper.
I don't understand that. I don't get that. Can you give a reason?
Pardon me?
Can you give a reason? Well, the government prosecutor says, look, if you think our witnesses are lying, you should acquit. And if you think our witnesses are telling the truth, you should convict. What's wrong with that?
Well, there's several cases in this very circuit.
Well, give me a reason rather than a case. What is wrong with that as a matter of common sense?
Because it alters the jury's decision.
How? The jury has to decide whom to believe.
Well, in this instance, if the jury is trying to decide whether or not Mr. Sandoval Gomez reasonably believed that he should be admitted back into the country, they should be focusing on not wondering whether or not the INS agent who testified is a trustworthy person, is telling the truth or not. It sort of shifts the burden. So that is that, along with the fact that the prosecutor injected his own personal testimony in his closing argument, made unfair comparisons of Mr. Sandoval Gomez to his own parents in terms of Mr. Sandoval.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, the comparison was unfair. He was comparing Mr. Sandoval Gomez, who had 2 years of total education in Mexico, to his parents, who are farmers in Georgia. It had nothing to do with the case. It was irrelevant. None of that evidence was permissible at trial.
Well, didn't it really go towards whether or not they were sophisticated?
It did.
In a very low sense.
It did, but it was irrelevant. It was improper. You're not permitted to add your own personal testimony. And again, it was an unfair comparison.
But his part of his defense is, apparently, or at least the rationale was, that he was unsophisticated, didn't understand why he was required to leave the United States.
That's true, but the prosecutor's parents had absolutely nothing to do with that. They weren't part of the evidence. Whether someone who's an American farmer in Georgia is an intelligent Mr. Sandoval Gomez...
And is that enough to change the jury's verdict?
That, along with the statement that the government's witnesses must be liars, those things were detrimental. They prejudiced the jury, they denied him of a fair trial, and they essentially caused the jury to change its decision.
What did it cause? The jury must have been... would have to be complete morons, wouldn't they, to be influenced by the reference to his parents? How could that possibly sway a jury?
Well, that, along with the fact that he stated that the government's witnesses...
What did the jury think? Oh, Georgia, yeah, that's just like Mexico. I don't get it.
They were improper statements that should never...
So what? Even if they were improper statements, how could they possibly have affected the jury's thinking?
Well, it was a very small case. There were only two witnesses for the government. Mr. Sandoval Gomez's testimony. That's
so you think a reference to farmers in Georgia was decisive?
That, along with his statement concerning the government's witnesses, I do believe affected the jury's verdict.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Parker. Ms. Green?
Good morning, Your Honor, Counsel. My name is Alice Green, and I represent the government in this appeal. I'd like to start with the issue last addressed, the prosecutor.
What I don't understand about your position in this case is why you haven't argued that the Anton defense is dead.
Well, in the terms of this case, at the time this case was tried, the Anton defense was not dead.
It is dead now. It's a doornail. But look, and we have principles about when a change in interpretation is retroactive. This case doesn't fit that. This isn't a case where a court does something that's completely unexpected. I mean, 9 circuits had rejected the Anton defense.
Correct, Your Honor, but Judge Crabb did not have the benefit of Anton at the time
of the
trial.
It doesn't matter. For the appeal, for purposes of appeal, there is no Anton defense anymore. So how can someone get a reversal on the basis of a non-existent defense?
Well, we certainly argued that in the unlikely event, in our opinion, that this would be remanded, that we didn't believe as defendant.
No, the point is different. The point is, and you cite, what is it, Judge Easterbrook's Burnham case, and it establishes criteria for when a new interpretation may be applied retroactively. And this case is one where it can be applied retroactively because the court was correcting a mistake, bringing itself in line with 8 or 9 other circuits. And as Judge Easterbrook said in his opinion, a defendant does not have a right to rely on a court's mistakes.
I'm certainly not going to argue against that position.
I thought the government would generally want to have the benefit of new interpretations that favor the government.
It did not occur to us to make that argument in the brief. Simply because of the facts of the case. We thought if it did occur on remand, we would certainly strenuously argue that it didn't apply. In terms of the prosecution...
What was the underlying felony that caused this to begin with? Underlying felony that he was deported?
His illegal reentry into the United States.
There was a felony...
There was an aggravated felony. It was voluntary manslaughter, Your Honor. He was convicted of that in 1996 in North Carolina.
You say involuntary or voluntary?
No, it was voluntary manslaughter.
How does that figure in the sentence he received?
In the sentencing? I was not the trial counsel here, and I don't recall exactly how it did. It's an important element, as I understand, to charge him in that way in the statute.
Well, it would have added to his history count, surely.
Right, and there was no issue raised about that.
Well, he got 90 months.
92 months, that's correct. I believe our brief fully explains why we think there was no error in either of the prosecutor's remarks, why there's certainly more than sufficient evidence to support the verdict, and why Judge Crabb's finding of no acceptance was not clearly erroneous. So unless there are other questions about those issues, we would rest on our brief.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Green. Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Parker, for accepting the appointment. And we'll move on to the next case.
Thank you.